Our next person is Mandy.
Hey, Mandy.
Hi.
So do you feel, Mandy, like the subject matter of the last caller, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it, but if you did, do you feel like that had any application to you?
Yeah, it did. I could relate to a lot of what he was saying. And a lot of symptoms as well. It seems
mm-hmm.
similar.
So we talked a little bit last week just as preparation for, or just for me to get a little bit of feedback from you about today. And how have you been since then?
Okay. I mean, it's a daily struggle here, but my symptoms haven't gone down, but I haven't had any panic attacks or super, super high anxiety.
I'm sorry?
I haven't had panic attacks as usual, but
are panic attacks common for you?
Yes, yeah, or they have been in the past.
Okay. Could you maybe, Mandy, just go into like a little bit of like maybe a 1 minute history of your symptoms with anxiety, like the intensity or the history of it, how long you've been feeling like that for?
Well, I've been anxious my entire life. I had a very unstable childhood, alcoholic father and mentally unstable mother. And I just thought it was normal. I just thought that everything, you know, being nervous all the time was what being human meant. I'd have a migraine or my heart would race and I would have anxiety attacks or panic attacks, but they would always go away and I could always, take deep breaths and calm myself down. And, but I got pregnant a couple of years ago and lost a couple of, three of my cousins passed away within a short period of time. And I started having panic attacks and all of a sudden, I was about to have this baby girl and somebody else I was going to be responsible for somebody else. And I just had this fear of abandoning her. And I started to have panic attacks constantly. I had a fear of dying during labor. And after I had her, I wasn't able to cry anymore or really get upset or have any emotions because now I was a mom and I kind of had to just hold my breath and not get upset, not cry, not get angry because I couldn't do that in front of this baby because I didn't want to scare this baby.
It almost
because
seems
that
like
my
you,
mom,
what you decided to go the opposite route. That your
right.
parents went because they expressed too many emotions and you thought, I'm going to protect my child by not expressing any.
Right, right. Like, I will smile through my pain all the time. My babies don't know that I have chronic pain. They've never seen me get angry either. And I just, I don't know what a healthy balance of that is. I don't want to walk around and be in pain all of the time, but I don't want my children to see
me. What are you feeling right now?
Not much.
What I've been hearing is you're talking about a lot of really painful stuff. I have chronic pain, I'm not able to express emotions, you're talking about a difficult childhood, but I hear you almost as if you're telling me a story, like it doesn't
mm-hmm.
seem like there's a lot of emotion linked to what you're saying. I'm just wondering if you're aware of feeling anything right now.
I know that I probably should be, but I know I push it down and hold my breath and try not to have a reaction because I have to hold it together. And I think I'm just in a chronic holding it together pattern probably.
I think you associate not expressing emotions, withholding it together, like having feelings is synonymous with falling apart.
Right, right.
Your left brain, your intellectual brain, may know that expressing feelings doesn't mean necessarily that you're falling apart, but I think your right brain may see danger signs flashing everywhere.
Right.
I wanted to talk a little bit about fear. You had mentioned that you scared yourself a lot, and I was just wondering, what were some of the things, and I think I started asking you this earlier, but what were some of the things that you scare yourself about these days? Like just this past week, what are some of the things you scared yourself about?
You know, now what scares me are my symptoms. I mean, in the past, I've been scared of a lot of things. But right now, it's just how I feel. And am I ever going to recover? Am I ever going to feel normal again? Am I ever going to be able to, you know, go for 5 minutes without thinking about my foot buzzing or tingling or my feet going, you know, going to sleep? And it's just, I feel tortured.
It sounds like you're riddled with fear.
Oh, I'm constantly. But at the same time, I still have doubt that these physical symptoms are fear-based. I still feel like there's something wrong with me that hasn't been uncovered yet.
That's part of the fear.
Right.
What are your symptoms the only thing that you scare yourself about, or do you scare yourself in other ways also?
Now, like, you know, within the last month, it's symptoms only. 35 days ago, it would have been, it could be my daughter having the flu or something wrong with one of them. I catastrophize and think that it's worse than it is. I've got other worries. I don't have necessarily fears, but I have other worries on my mind currently. But when it comes to, you know, large fears, it's you know, how I feel constantly.
It almost sounds like you have an addiction to scaring yourself, that you're always going to find something to scare yourself with, so that it was maybe your daughter getting sick, and then it was, are my symptoms ever going to go away? And you know.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I want to do, but I feel like if I prepare for it, if I think the worst, then maybe I can prevent something from happening. Or
it gives you the illusion of control. If I focus on the worry, if I think about it, it's what people, if you feel internally out of control, this is oftentimes what superstition is. If there's a feeling of being internally out of control, it's like you try to control your external environment to feel less out of control, because it's a painful feeling.
Right.
But one of the things I wanted to know is, given the fact that it sounds like dozens or maybe even hundreds of times every day you scare yourself, what do you do when you scare yourself? I mean, when this voice that seemingly comes from, you know, the abyss of your unconscious mind scares you and tells you your symptoms are never going to go away, or your daughter's going to get the flu and something's going to happen to her, how do you respond then?
I mean, it usually goes on for a little bit before I can stop myself, but you know, I try to think rationally, and sometimes sometimes the rational part of my head is not very clear. I used to be able to do this. I don't know, you know, a couple of years ago I could rationally think through things, but I feel like now I can it's like a runaway train sometimes, and I can't stop it. Then I feel worse.
How old is your daughter?
I have a 28-month and a 4-month-old.
Okay. So let's say the 28-month-old in a few years experiences her first lightning or thunderstorm, and she's terrified. You know, she just read Chicken Little and thinks, oh, my God, the sky is literally falling. And she goes knocking on your door, and she is just in a state of panic. You know, mommy, mommy, you know, what's going on? What do you do? What in your
You know, we
heart,
did.
in your gut, what do you do?
Well, we did this last week. She was scared of a storm, so
Oh, wow. That's good timing.
yeah. Yeah. So we had a lightning storm, and she was scared. So we went outside, and we not outside. We sat in the one car garage, and on our golf cart, and just sat on the back of that, which is a place that she likes to be. It's a fun place for her. And we watched the lightning storm, and then you know, she told me she was scared, and I told her what the lightning was, and that it was gonna make noise, and that it was gonna the rain was gonna fall, and it was gonna water the grass, and the grass was gonna grow, and it was gonna turn green, and the yard would be pretty. And I walked her through, you know, logically what all those things were gonna happen so that she
Well, it
wouldn't be
sounds like more
scared.
than logic. It sounds like you actually provided emotional comfort for her.
Right, yeah, I guess so.
I mean, I honestly, when you were describing that, like, got a feeling of soothing that even came up in me. You know, it wasn't like you just described to her the chemical reactions that were going on that lead to a lightning storm, that you were actually providing comfort for her.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I do that. I do that constantly, and even though
You
I
do
can,
what constantly?
I constantly soothe them. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could probably argue that I may go too far in terms of that. I have a hard time with temper tantrums and fits and crying and
Did you get soothed growing up? Or comforted when, if your parents were fighting with each other and you were really scared, would you get have your emotions attended to and get soothed afterward?
No, I don't ever remember having ever being soothed. I really don't I have very little emotional connection to my mother whatsoever. Or
Well,
my
it sounds like
father.
somehow you found a way to provide this really nurturing, maternal, soothing voice to give to your own children, but that you didn't get a feeling of being soothed very often yourself.
Right, because I know it was. I know what they did. I know they made mistakes, and I know that they didn't. I just have a hard. I have a hard time understanding why two adults would do what they did to my sister and brothers and I
It sounds
when.
to me like you're doing the same thing to yourself.
I guess so.
I mean, you're telling me that you are capable of this deep level of soothing and comfort. Whenever your daughters get scared, you will just smother them with love and comfort and soothing. Yet, when I asked you know, how you would respond when this other part of your mind scared you, that there wasn't any hint of that. At first, you piled it on, and then you maybe tried to have a logical, rational conversation with yourself. If you can go back in time to, can you imagine yourself? Do you know what you looked like when you were maybe 4 or 5 or 6 years old?
Yeah.
If you could think of yourself living in this house with these unstable parents that you didn't feel like you can trust or count on or were there to soothe you. And you can suddenly materialize in your adult form, and you were to come across this little girl who was you when you were 6 years old, and she was really scared. What would you give to her that she didn't get, that she needed?
I mean, probably the same things that I do for my daughter. I think, I mean, I'd be mad at my parents.
I mean, I think that feeling anger toward the parents, like John, the last caller, did, is an important part of it. But I want to know how you would, what you would give yourself, your younger self, this part of you that was living in a state of fear and uncertainty and insecurity, and she was terrified. What would you, how would you treat her? What would you give her?
I mean, I would.
I don't want
I
you
would
just to give me words. I want you to think about, actually imagine coming across this little girl and seeing her when she was 5 or 6 years old, feeling scared and uncertain. What would you do? What would you give her? What would you let her know?
I mean, I'd sit her in my lap and rock her and tell her that everything was going to be okay and that I didn't have to be scared. And
how would that have been for her to hear that and get that?
I think she could have felt safe for once. You know,
yeah. I'm going to tell you something. Back in the 1960s, they were doing these studies on epileptics, and they actually found that if they did an experiment where they would snip the corpus callosum, you know what that is? That's that bundle of wires that connects the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. And they found that if they snipped that, if they cut it, that the seizures went away. So they started operating on all of these people with epilepsy. And a lot of them, the seizures went away. But then they actually found that they started having some strange symptoms, because the left brain, the left hemisphere, controls the right half of the body, and the right hemisphere controls the left half of the body. So what they found is these people's, their left and the right arms or hands and legs would started acting independent from each other. Right? So this guy went to go light up his cigarette, and then his left hand knocked it out of his mouth. And totally unbeknownst to him, he had no control over it. There was a case of a man where one of his hands was actually trying to strangle his wife, and he had to restrain his own hand with his other hand. And so they started, House actually did an episode on it that was surprisingly accurate, but they're called split brain patients, and they started doing all of these studies on them, and they gave them these questionnaires. And the question might be, how traumatizing was that bully from when you were 8 years old that you told us about? And, you know, the right hand writes the 1 out of 10. It was maybe 30 years ago. But their left hand, totally unbeknownst to them, writes down a 10 out of 10. And they don't even learn about the results themselves until afterward. So one of the things that they actually found from these tests and these experiments where the time doesn't exist in the right brain, that the right brain, this 5-year-old, this 6-year-old version of you, is still there. And that little girl that didn't get this soothing, that yearned for this comfort, this stability, is still there in your right brain.
Mm.
And that's who's getting scared. Right? The surface fear doesn't really matter. You're constantly scaring yourself, not on purpose. There's this, you know, the mom and dad in your head. There's a lot of different parts there. It's constantly scaring you, and this little girl is getting terrified. And oftentimes what happens is we become so used to feeling scared that it actually becomes familiar after a while. Right? So when you were young, you got scared so often that it actually became the norm. And believe it or not, the mind is actually more comfortable going to something familiar, even if it's painful, than to go to something unfamiliar. So I think that for you, a fight or flight state became the norm. And your mind is constantly going back to fear, fear, fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm in a dual state of fight or flight.
Yeah. Well, your mind learned that that was normal early on. You know, this is oftentimes why girls that are physically abused when they're really young might grow up to marry someone that physically abuses them, because they become so used to it, it becomes so familiar, it becomes almost mistaken with love so early in their life that they gravitate toward it. And so it is with fear. So you had these parents that would scare you all the time, and this fear state became so familiar that you actually became comfortable with it. It became the norm. So that now, later in life, your mind is constantly going to it, because even though it's painful, it's familiar. It actually reduces unconscious anxiety. So this is what's going on in you. You are constantly scaring yourself. Not on purpose, but because it was so familiar so early on that you will find anything to scare yourself with. These symptoms are never going to go away. Maybe I have this new disease that the doctors haven't been able to find. My daughter's going to get sick and something's going to happen to her. Right? I'm going to be late to this meeting. I'm going to call up for this TMS webinar and I'm not going to know what to say. I mean, your mind is just going to find any reason possible to scare you.
Yeah, I feel like if I'm not fixating on something to worry about, then I don't know what else to put up there. Like there's always noise in my head that's constant worry. If it's not one thing, it's another.
So what you need is the same thing that little girl needs. When you hear that voice scaring you, what she needs is to be comforted, just like your girls need and just like you needed when you were 5 or 6 years old. That little girl is still in there. And you're going to scare yourself. You're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to scare yourself 100 times. And I want you to think about that little girl that you described, who was 5 or 6, who so desperately needed to be taken into someone's arms and told, you're safe. It's okay. I'm here for you. You're not alone. It's going to be okay. And I want you to think about her tomorrow when you wake up and, you know, maybe you're going to have this fear like, oh, this thing that Alan told me isn't going to work, right? There's right. Just a fear. And there's that little girl getting scared. And you have the opportunity to either neglect her fear like your parents did or give to her what you would do if you could go back in time. And given the fact that time doesn't exist in the right brain, you actually can.
So I've heard several, I've heard many different times that anxiety is worse, can be worse on the left side of the body. And is that the right brain? Is that why?
I don't know. I've actually never heard that before, but maybe.
Interesting. Okay.
But I mean, you feel unsafe all of the time. And the anger that we had talked about previously is a really important component of it. But feeling safe is important, too. You don't feel safe in the world. Everywhere you look, it's a threat. You know, your
right.
daughter is a threat because I don't want to screw her up by, you know, having these emotions. Your pain is a threat. Your emotions are a threat. Everything is a threat. What you need is what that little girl needed, is to just go back in time and let her know, you're safe, I'm here for you. Every time you scare yourself, and she doesn't get attended to, right, and she doesn't hear the message, you're safe, you're going to be okay, it's like just a re-traumatization of that fear pattern that happened when you were a kid. But if you can start soothing yourself, I mean, the good news is I've worked with people and I really actually had to teach them what nurturing looked like. They had no, it would take 6 months even just to get them to experience what that felt like. You're ahead of the curve. You already know how to do that. You do it with your daughters. You even did it in that, fantasy that we talked about, if you can go back in time. It's just a matter of giving yourself that. Imagine that little girl in your right brain, 6 years old, desperate for comfort, desperate for soothing. You know, put your hand on your chest, like we talked about. It gives you a feeling of being hugged, and let yourself know, let her know, you're safe, it's going to be okay. I'm here for you. And give her that comfort that she's been yearning for so many years. And you do that. You do a few thousand repetitions. You will actively change your neural connections. You will no longer, it's like reparenting yourself. And that's one of the things that you're missing.
Right.
You just don't feel safe.
Right. No, I never do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you may have gone to therapy, you've read all these books, but how's that going to help you when you feel terrified every minute of every day?
Yeah, that's what I've been struggling with, because I can't figure out, I haven't been able to figure out why I do this, or why I'm always anxious, or why I'm scared of my own shadow. Or...
Yeah. Listen, you were taught when you were young that the world isn't safe. But you have
right.
a healthy brain hemisphere right now. You've developed that against all odds. And you need to use that and let yourself know, let your right brain know, let that little girl inside of you know. You are safe. I'm here for you. It's going to be okay. And see if you can bring yourself down and help yourself feel soothed and comforted in that way. The fears are going to seem real, you know, but it's really just kind of a means to an end. It's your mind very cleverly bringing you to a place of fear, using a thought. The thoughts are never real. It's just a means to an end. It's like your mind wants to bring you to a fight or flight place because that feels familiar. But it can't do it alone, so it needs to eject a thought into your mind. So maybe the thought is, your pain's never going to go away.
Right.
Maybe the thought, you know, I was maybe about 5 years ago or something, me and Howard Schubiner, who's a TMS physician, were going to be doing a radio interview together with Jeanette Barber. And I'd never done a radio interview before, and this was maybe going to be used to treat other TMS practitioners. So, you know, in my mind, it was kind of like a psychological threat. So my mind started injecting all of these fears into me. The first was like, oh, what if you get laryngitis? Doesn't make any sense at all. And then the next fear was like, oh, he's in Michigan, you're in Los Angeles. You know, what if you guys talk over each other? And I didn't really buy into that. And then the next fear was, did you pay rent this month? Like, it wasn't even related, you know? And then the next one was like, did you remember to shut off the oven? You know, our minds, when it feels a threat, is just trying to bring us to this fight or flight state. And it will use any thought possible, anything that it thinks could hook us in. Now, I didn't buy into any of these fears. And I spent that time just letting that little kid in my right brain know, you're safe, it's okay, I'm here for you. I didn't buy into any of these surface fears. I just kept soothing myself. And by the time the interview came around, I was pretty zen. And these fears are going to seem very real to you.
Okay.
You're going to have you can start to catalog them. This
yeah.
There really is something physically wrong with me. Something's going to happen to my daughter. You know, I'm not going to be able to financially support myself if the pain gets worse. There's probably going to be, you know, 100 of them, but none of the fears are real. One of your goals is to rip the mask off of these fears and see it for what it is. This is your mind's way of trying to bring you to a fight or flight state. And what you need more than anything is to be comforted, to be soothed. You're going to be okay. Going to be all right. I'm here for you.
That makes a lot of sense. Like I have this monkey mind that, you know, several times a minute I have a scary negative thought. And, you know, I've read through a lot of the TMS things, and I haven't been able to figure out, because I was searching for repressed rage, and I couldn't figure out what I was angry or what I was repressing, because I'm angry. I'm angry at my parents, and I'm,
right.
I feel like I'm feeling all of those things, but nothing seems to subside. But I feel anxious. So I feel like that's something I never got comforted.
You know, you have such a soothing, comforting voice. You really do, and I imagine that you're doing a really good job of, like, soothing and comforting your daughters. See, you even talk out loud to yourself. Your daughters are too young to think you're crazy anyway. You know, talk out loud to yourself and let yourself know you're safe. I'm here for you. I know you're scared right now. I know this fear seems very real, but I know what this is. This is just it's like an aftershock. It's the collateral damage of growing up in a world where I didn't feel safe. And even though it feels like this fear is real, instead of piling on, I'm going to soothe myself or comfort myself and let myself know it's going to be okay. I'm here for you this time around.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Do you think that's something you can do?
Yeah, I think my daughter looks a lot like me, so I can picture her. And I should just treat my whole 33 years before now as just PTSD and try to recover from a very scary experience and stop scaring myself.
It is PTSD. It is.
Yeah.
And you nailed it. You know, if you stop scaring yourself, you can heal that. Because your right brain doesn't know that you're not 6 years old and that the world
mm-hmm.
is safe now. If you ever talk to a Holocaust survivor, oftentimes it's really similar. Even though it's 50 years later, you know, they're still sleeping with one eye open because the right brain doesn't know you're safe now. So what our goal is to help your right brain learn you are safe now. Your mind is peppering you with 100 fears every day, and each one of those is an opportunity to soothe yourself. Every one of those is an opportunity to let yourself know you're safe now.
Yeah, I think that I've minimized a lot of scary things that happened and just assumed, well, that shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be causing all these problems now. I mean, lots of people go through scary things, but I guess for looking back now, those are scary, but I guess I think that I should have been able to handle it, but I wouldn't have asked my 2-year-old to handle those things, or I wouldn't have expected her to not be scared in those situations.
You know, that was actually just a very comforting stance that you just took right there by saying, hey, you know, instead of saying get over it or it doesn't matter, I'm telling myself that was difficult and it was hard and it is okay. Can you put your hand on your chest right now as we're talking?
Okay.
And see if you can just take a couple breaths and I know the term inner child sounds kind of new agey, but like I talked about earlier, this really is this little girl that's figuratively living in your right brain. And she's scared because every scary thing that happened to her is, you know, she doesn't know that the world is safe right now. And let her know right now, you know, out loud or to yourself, whatever you're most comfortable with, just let her know you're safe now. I'm here for you. I'm going to take care of you. And it's going to be okay. Just like you would have done if you could go back in time, and you're doing it right now. And just take a moment or two and give yourself that message. Instead of scaring yourself for once, you're doing the opposite. You're letting yourself know you're safe now. I'm here for you. And it's going to be okay. How does it feel to give yourself that message?
It feels foreign.
It feels foreign, yeah.
Yeah, it's not something I'm used to.
Yeah.
I'm doing it for my babies, but not for myself.
That's right. That's great. I mean, it should feel foreign at first. What you're doing is you're creating new tracks. I think of it as like, you know, if there's a car driving along and there's a snowbank and the car goes over the snowbank and makes tracks. And then the next car comes along, goes over those same tracks. And the next 1,000 cars all go over those same tracks. They're the only tracks that are laid. So when the next car comes, that's where they're going to, you know, naturally go. What we're trying to do is create new tracks. Instead of going over those same tracks of scaring yourself and then just buying into that fear and spinning in that fear state, you're creating new tracks and you're letting yourself know it is safe and you're safe and I'm going to take care of you. And the more you do that, the deeper the tracks get. And you are actually, literally altering your neural connections. And it's like going back in time and reparenting yourself and building a world where you are safe now.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay. Good.
Hello.
And what all it takes is recognition, discipline, and then repetition, and that's it. And when you're able to do that over and over and let yourself know, let that little girl in your right brain know you're safe over and over, you will change your brain to the same brain that someone who actually grew up in a safe environment had. You will have effectively reparented yourself.
Okay? It's nice to think there's hope.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't it feel so good right now to feel taken care of and protected and optimistic? It is foreign for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I know it. I've just created a really bad habit, I guess, just trying to daring myself to protect myself.
Well, that bad habit was created for you. You didn't have a say in it.
Right.
You just took the baton and it's all you knew. But you know more now.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, there's other components, like what I talked about with the previous caller, about actually getting in touch with the anger that you feel toward this mom or dad in your head that's trying to scare you. But that isn't enough. It isn't just about standing up for yourself, right? Like if your daughter were getting bullied in school, you would head right down to that schoolyard and you would, you know, get in this bully's face and say, if you touch my kid again, I'm going to come back down here and beat you up myself. But you're also going to go home and you're going to hug your daughter and you're going to let her know it's okay, you're safe. And so both parts are important. You want to stand up to that voice that's abusing you or neglecting you, but you also want to learn to be your own nurturing parent and soothe that part of you and let that part of you know, hey, it's going to be okay, you're safe now, I'm here for you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're going to have plenty of opportunities because you are going to get off the phone right now. And within 15 minutes, it's going to start again. And it's going to say, oh, this works for other people, but it's not going to work for you. Hey, that's just another fear right there. It's okay. I'm here for you. You're okay. You see that? It's going to be clever.
Yeah.
It's going to come up with fears that are so outside the box. It really seems real, but your job is just to recognize, hey, this is just another fear, but I'm here to let you know you're safe now and I'm going to take care of you. You become your own parent. You have 3 kids now. You have your 4-month-old, your 28-month-old, and your 33-year-old.
Okay.
That's you, if it wasn't clear.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. 4 kids, maybe. So, you know, see if you could implement this and actually start creating new behavioral patterns. And, you know, see if in a few weeks or in a month you don't have yourself actually feeling safe or have that little girl in your brain actually feeling like, you know, she has a mom. Not a drill sergeant, not a terrorist, not a dictator, but a nurturing mother.
Right. Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling up and sharing all of that with us.
Thank you. I appreciate I appreciate the time and opportunity.
All right,
I'll come back in a month with my success story.
That's good. Yeah, keep us updated.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's very interesting. Thank you, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of talk in the chat room about the timelessness and what it means for the right brain to not have a sense of time. Is that like the id not having a sense of time, or maybe the limbic system not having a sense of time?
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes I'll be working with people and they'll say, oh, the past is the past. I mean, a lot of therapists really will go back to the past and say, what was that like for you? But in my experience, there isn't really enough emphasis on the way that the past is still playing out on a minute-to-minute basis, even in the present.
Yeah, that's something that I love. Occasionally, I was just recently in an email to someone I quoted on your website when you're describing psychodynamic therapy and how it works, how you describe the connection between the past and the present. And I think that's
right.
That's very helpful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that cognitive behavioral therapy actually could be effective in isolation. I mean, I think there's different paths to the same outcome. And oftentimes learning, like with Mandy, we were talking about the fact that her parents scared her. And
mm-hmm.
that could be important to know, you know, where she learned to scare herself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not enough. You know, you need to hear that and change the way you treat yourself. Instead of scare yourself, instead of being a fearmonger, learn to be your own parent. So a lot of people that I work with are like, I don't know why I'm not getting better. Well, how do you treat yourself on a minute-to-minute basis? Do you scare yourself? Are you a good parent to yourself? Or are you, you know, a drill sergeant or a dictator or you know, I can't think of any more synonyms.
Yeah.
But that's a really important component of healing.
Yeah. In terms of on the forum,
what's that?
I was just going to say that on the forum, a lot of people when they do the journaling, they try to go just into the past. But what I'm hearing from this, and what I hear from other sources as well, is just it's important to tie it into the present, to look at how you're thinking on a day to day basis. Just another angle of looking at it.
Exactly, yeah.